I would like to dedicate the archive of this evening's Shabbat Torah study to Thomas Ho and any other OTR drivers who love Yom. I guess we could call you guys the Fellowship of the Reef.
Welcome to Shabbat Torah study. I'm Larry, of course, setting in for Craig tonight, and I have Kirk and JB on the line. How are you guys doing?
Just fine. Good evening. Happy Shabbat.
Well, thank you. JB, can we hear you there? Okay, we're going to suggest that maybe JB's having some internet problems tonight, you know. And what we had discussed earlier, you know, we're people that have been out here, seriously considering the words that Yahweh put out for some of us for, you know, a decade now. And sometimes we forget what people don't know, basic things. And so what Kirk and I and JB decided to do tonight was just kind of go back to the beginning and what it is that that got us to connect to the truth and the questions that we had when we first walked in, you know, to the covenant, to the family covenant relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what I want to do here is I'm just going to start with a couple of these notes, and I'm just going to explain some things that, become very revealing.
Okay.
One of the things Yahusha talked about and Yahweh railed about in his words was just how bad the scribes are. And the people that, you know, decide to twist his words. Yahweh calls them twisting his words, and he talks about people that eliminated his personal and proper name and replaced it with Baal's moniker, which is Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And how the scribes who did that will literally end up incarcerated. And, of course, the more you get into Yahweh's words, the more you begin to realize and understand how important the name is. In fact, I think once you remove the name, the very concepts that Yah was trying to get across are twisted. You know, they disappear. Haven't you found that? I mean,
call that, though, like one of the biggest sins, or certainly in the top of the top three things to start on the first tablet, written in stone, he says, don't change my name. You know, so
yeah, it's probably
high on his list.
Yeah, it's probably the main one. You know,
yeah.
But you know, the lording over people, suggests a certain type of person or a certain type of an individual. And since Yahweh actually doesn't want to be known as a religious deity. I know that because he tells us, I want to be welcomed as an individual. I mean, he says that. You know, he doesn't want to be put on a pedestal. He doesn't have an ego problem. He's not Stalin, you know, and he's not Mao, and he's not worried about losing power, and he's not worried about manipulating people, you know, like our political actors are of today or religious leaders are of today.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that struck me, and I was just talking to a woman today who's 5 years been out of church, but she's really in a serious search for the truth. And she said basically what she heard me saying was it lit up a truth light for her.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want to start with one of the one of my favorite passages. It's in Yasha Yahu 29:12-13. And I want to explain this because this is how religious copy edits work. that you and I have both heard the phrase, the beginning of knowledge is the fear of the Lord, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's an old scripture.
Yeah, it just rolls off people's tongues. We're God-fearing people and things like this.
Exactly.
Well, if you fear, you don't know him. You just don't know him. He says, and there's a word in here that we're going to get to. It's called yira, which can mean respect or it can mean fear. You'll find a light and a dark side to words in Paleo-Hebrew. You know, and you will also find that the religious copy editors just about always take the low road. And it was this passage that made me realize this and another one where he talked about wanting to be greeted as an individual. Those were the two passages that had a giant impact on me. He said, then Yahweh said, for so much as these people approach me with their mouths and their lip service, yet they remove their hearts from me. Their yira, fear, toward me exists because it is taught from man-made traditions learned by rote. And rote is, you know, reciting something over and over. Yeah, and we know that he's not saying respect of me. So he says all fear towards me is a false notion. It's a religious notion. But that's really what makes religions tick, isn't it?
Absolutely. You have to come under their thumb, or they have no reason for being.
Right.
But you know, it's funny because religious people, well, they
go ahead.
Hey, JB, we can't. You're just going in and out. We can't hear you. Yeah. It's just making a lot of noise is what it's doing, just in and out and in and out, even when you're not talking.
I'll see if I can work on that some more.
That's good right now.
I can hear you now, you know.
Yeah.
But
kind of up and down. I might just mute myself for the show and...
Yeah, that's kind of it is up and down because we'll hear two or three clear words and then it'll be gone. But Yahweh writes over in Yirmiyahu, he says, their plan is for my people to overlook, forget, and cease to value my personal and proper name. Mm-hmm. By way of revelations and communications which they recount, mankind to their fellow countrymen and associates, just as when a relationship with the Lord, their fathers, overlooked and ignored and forgot my personal and proper name. So, you know, and he asks, you know, what is my personal and proper name? What is my son's personal and proper name?
Mm-hmm.
You know, surely you know and understand.
Right.
Yeah, that's in Proverbs, which means word picture, or Masal. And, you know, I started looking at these things, and I said, wow. And this is another big passage, and this is why I put all these in one note. And it shall be in this specific day, prophetically declares Yahweh, you shall encounter and welcome me, Kara, as an individual. Yishi. And you will not call me my Lord ever again. You know, he doesn't want to be feared. He doesn't want to be known as a Lord, lording over people, as a religious deity. And he just wants a relationship. I mean, that's what it said Adam was made for.
Right.
For the, you know, go ahead, Kirk.
No, I was going to say, and you know, and Yahushua called him Father. He never said to him, he never called him Lord. He said, this is, talk to your Father, which art in heaven, you know. So it's everywhere you turn, it's the same parent, child, or even friend type of relationship. I mean, you're absolutely, now those were the two, were those your two hot buttons, the don't fear him and personal name? Is that the
when I read, you know, that he didn't want to be feared,
mm-hmm.
I realized that the whole facade of religion came crashing down.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there are people out. Yeah, well, there are people out there that still fear Yahweh, you know, and you know, people who have no need to fear him, and no reason to fear him. He says not to fear him, but they've had this beaten into their heads because if you think about it, I mean, you think about it as a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not speaking for a bunch of other religions, but I do know at one time I was a Christian. Mm-hmm. And really the concept was love me or I'll burn you in hell, which would make this particular deity that's lording over you and asking you to fear him a monster.
Amazingly, I didn't pick up on it as much, but is there any point now, once you change your perspective in that regard, I mean, is it any reason that you could see that you could find fear somewhere in this relationship?
No.
No. Okay, neither. I mean, it's just what you're describing to me is just a total perspective change, and that changed, it just, all the ducks kind of line up in a row after that, don't they?
Well, yeah, they really do. I mean, you know, it's one of these things. You know, when I look at Yahweh, and you know, he calls bowing a curse.
Mm-hmm.
Yahweh calls bowing and kneeling a curse.
Yeah.
And he actually said that because, you know, the clerics had decided his name was so meaningless, and because they despised his name and wouldn't put it in their mouths or on their heart, he was going to curse them with bowing. And that is the signature mark of any religion that I know of.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Bow your head, close your eyes.
Yeah. In Malachi, it means messenger, or Malachi today. So then this condition is to you, O clerics. If you do not listen, and if you do not place it on your heart to give great honor to my name, says Yahweh of the spiritual regiment, I will send out in among you all a curse. I will curse with the curse of kneeling down. You know, that is a curse. And what do people do? Well, what they want to do is go misread Daniel, and then they want to go get on their knees and pray. I see it all the time. You know, you've seen these platitudes, haven't you?
That, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
A real man is on his knees. Well, you know, you know, maybe over in Folsom Prison, that's true. But it certainly isn't true when you're dealing with Yahweh, because Yahweh wants an eye-to-eye type of relationship. The real men in the Torah didn't kneel down. They walked with Yahweh.
They stood up.
And he,
upright.
Yeah. Yeah. He. Well, that's another thing. Once you realize that and you're getting into his words, everywhere he's describing his people, he calls them upright. And they are upright. Yeah, man. They're standing up. And, you know, these are the concepts that that really got me to understanding who Yahweh was. And I'm going to kind of stop there, but it was just, it was a matter of names. It was a matter of his nature. It's a matter of if anybody was kneeling, it was him.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have in a picture of religion is we've got somebody, you know, it's like looking into a mirror where everything becomes backwards, two-dimensional, you know. Instead of him kneeling down to help us, which we need, we're kneeling down to him. Let me tell you, he don't need my help. I mean, that's what I know. He doesn't.
No. You know, in the same, to make your point a little bit stronger, I mean, when you see Yahweh, he's baraking or blessing, where they always translate it as blessing, and we, you know, he went on for weeks, Yahweh went on for weeks on barak of him kneeling down to lift us up. I mean, that's a concept you're not going to find in churches. It doesn't happen. I mean, we're always kneeling down as if we're lifting him up or lifting his spirit up by us groveling at his feet, which is absurd when you think about it. I mean, when you talk to people like the one you said there was somebody you'd been talking to recently, what was this person's hot button when you did it? Can you identify that for them?
Well, not yet. I mean, there was. there was a whole host of things, but I did what I did was gave her about 20 notes to read.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's so many misnomers out there. As an example, I know now that Yahusha cannot be understood without the Torah. Without the Torah, you can't even understand what he's doing. You know, what she said is she believed at one time that and maybe still does to some degree, but I right away I showed her the cross was, you know, satanic. Mm-hmm. But what she said was she believed that, you know, God's son died on a cross. Well, yeah, that's what we were taught when we were lost. Obviously, Yahusha can't die. He's a diminished part of Yahweh. His spirit, the very next day, was his consciousness, or nephesh, was in Sheol fulfilling matzah. The very next day, you know, although that body was gone, his nephesh met back up with the Ruach Kodesh, that set-apart spirit. He said he found the light. And then he was up walking around, but it was not a body anymore. It was actually a physical, you know, a spiritual being taking the form of a mm-hmm. of a man.
Right.
That's why nobody, you know, recognized him. I mean, can you imagine if how many children do you have, Kirk? Do you have any kids?
Well, I'm afraid I don't have any children, but
you don't. Okay, yeah, well, I've got four. But well, you're married though, right?
Oh yeah. Uh huh.
Okay, imagine your wife dies. Okay, and you got a dog. Imagine your dog died. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, your dog, your wife, your child. And then, you know, when something like this happens, it's traumatic in our lives. I mean, you know, we miss it right away. You know, we know there's a problem. And imagine that you were still in grieving because, you know, 2 days later, if you've lost a loved one, you're still thinking about it.
Oh, yeah.
And then they walked up to you and you didn't recognize them.
That would be odd when you put it.
Yeah,
you
even
know,
your dog, you know, or your cat. Yeah. I mean, it would really just forget your wife or your brother or somebody you've walked with and spent every day with for 3 years, you know. Or in the case of Miriam, her son. She gave birth to.
Yeah.
You know, and she didn't recognize him. And somebody
you
told
know
me, they told us. Yeah, oh, of course you do. And you know what they look like. In fact, there's people that still conjure up the idea 20 years later that their son's in a room with them or something. I've heard them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and they hope to see them, you know, or every time the phone rings, they just hope it would be them. Well, if 2 days later, after you saw this brutal killing, this crucifixion, of the upright pillar on the upright pole, and you were a relative that had been with him all his life for 33 years or something,
right?
You know, and you don't recognize him.
Yeah, it's very odd.
Had a preacher say they were in. Somebody told me their preacher told them they brought that up to him, and he said, "Well, that's because they were in such immense grief." What? I mean, this is a bizarre concept.
Yeah, well, no, that doesn't fly. That would be no reason. You can be in grief, but all 12 of them, I mean, there was actually 70 in the circle, almost real close people to him.
Yeah.
The guys who followed that he had lunch with, you know, and walked down the street and with his family, his mother, I mean, somebody would have recognized him.
And then when he reappeared, they didn't understand who he was again.
Yeah.
That's because
so
each time he did it, he was taking a little different form, you know.
Yeah. So obviously it wasn't the same form. So it was, or they would have recognized him. So it's not a bodily resurrection.
Right.
Why would he get back in that body anyway?
Yeah, and it was used up.
But it was used
up
for anything in the future.
Yeah, if you're going to be a spiritual being and you're out flying around the galaxy, a physical body would be kind of a hindrance. It wouldn't be a plus, you know.
Take it to the moon.
You know, the other thing I want to point out here, too, though, is just how bad associating Yahweh is to religion. And then I'm going to have you hit your high points. But in Dabarim, which just means words, today they've corrupted it to Deuteronomy. I have no idea what it means, but it doesn't mean words. Indeed, when you come into the land, associated with Yahweh, your God, who's given it to you. You shall not accept, teach, or imitate any of the disgusting religious ways of the Gentile nations. Now, as far as I know, every religion's got people putting their head down and their hands together and praying.
Mm-hmm.
They all seem to have a fear of their God. You know, they all kind of do the same things with just a little different twist.
Mm-hmm.
So Yahweh says not to imitate any of these things. And it's, I don't think it's a matter of just him accidentally saying that. I think he's pulling us away from religious notions. I mean, he calls them disgusting. And, mm-hmm. of course, when they're associating him with these things, they are disgusting. As far as religious imagery, what does he say? This is my name and my renown and my manifestation of power, and I will not give it give to another, or my renowned reputation to any religious imagery.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you walk in churches, they've got religious images, they've got crosses, some of them have these little nonsense pictures of him with a sun halo around his head, right?
Yeah. Yeah. As an artist, I can tell you, it's big business.
Yeah. They're kneeling to him or kneeling in front of these pictures or saying, oh, you know, they're going to come to meet with God in this place. Well, of course, that's all nonsense. And he hates religious imagery.
And he says, don't do it.
Yeah. And so all those things taken in as a total. You know, and especially like as an example, when we that passage I read where he said, "All fear of me is a man-made notion learned by rote." So when we see somebody saying, "I fear the Lord," okay, well, Lord was Satan's title, so you're afraid of Satan, I guess. And then
knowingly,
you know, they walk around fearful. I don't know what that's got to do with Yahweh.
Well, you fear lords. If that's your concept, then you should fear him if that's what your concept of God is, if he's a lord. Because lords have to be obeyed. They're not, that is not talking about freedom. You wouldn't have a freedom associated with a lord, so that's what they believe. And they may just be saying it and don't even know any better, but they just parrot whatever they've heard.
Yeah, well, then you got the situation, too, where, you know, he's calling bowing a curse. They all seem to think that bowing is a good thing when, you know, the person bowing down is the stronger one, helping the weaker one up. He's bending down to help us out. And that's Yahweh. I mean, there's no way I could help him out. I share his words like you do because I love the truth and I like people to walk away from these horrible, you know, religious notions and everything like that. But I can't really help Yahweh. You know, there's no way for me to do it. You know,
We spent on Shattering Myths. I got to participate a little bit for 1 week when we. What I did is I looked up as a challenge from Yada. I looked up prayer and worship and praise, and I took every word that was translated in English Bibles from prayer, worship, and praise, and none of them mean prayer, worship, and praise at all. Not one.
Expound. I believe it. When I hear praise, pray, worship, and all these things, especially. Well, fear and command, that's another one. I mean, when I hear these things, I had one guy put on my wall today that Jesus commanded us to love one another. I said, so in your world, you can command people into love. I said, that's something.
That's quite a deal, huh?
Yeah, I'd like to come up to the most beautiful women I have ever met and say, I command you to love me, you know, or something. Yeah, I'm sure that'll work out. But
Well, let me ask you something. When you first came to reading Yada Yar, and I don't know that you would have read Yada Yar before Introduction to God, because that came a little bit later.
Yeah, I was. ITG didn't exist at the time.
As I did as well. Mine probably didn't go back 7, 8 years, something like that. But and I read yada yada over and over and over again. But what was some of the things, Larry, that really struck you? In addition to those that you've already mentioned, what are some of the things that just really hit a nerve and said, wow?
I'll tell you what really got me to understand mm-hmm. this was all true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is before I got into a lot of the prophecies that, which, you know, like him saying, they're going to remove my name for Lord. That's a prophecy. That's what
mm-hmm.
he did.
Mm-hmm.
And they even write, the Lord saith, you're going to not value my name, saith the Lord. And they write it like it means something. You know, what it means is you're going to take his name, Yahweh's personal and proper name, the way he wants to know, be known for all time and all generations and all places, and you're going to replace it with Lord. That's what he said that you would do, and that's what you did.
And they did.
You know, yeah, speaking, when I say you, it's the proverbial you being the religious copy editors. But the thing that got me, the thing that honestly got me, you know, when I was as young as 10 years old, I started mm-hmm. hearing that time and light were tied together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then as I got older, I read stuff that, you know, from what they call time-light scholars, which... Mm-hmm. These are people involved in actual science of relativity is what it really is.
Uh-huh.
And then when I found out that, you know, from my perspective setting here, of course, we now know by working it backwards, and of course this is about 14.5 billion years seems to be the most accurate time measurement of the universe. If you take them and average them all together, you'll come out with about 14.5 billion years. And so here we're setting at 14.5 billion years, and as we go backwards in time, the more dense an object is, the hotter the object is,
mm-hmm.
The quicker the light wave, but the slower these light waves stretch. That means time and light,
right.
They're inexplicably tied together. There was no time until there was light. And so... when I saw that it was 10 to the 12th power, and then you take the 10 to the 12th power and you multiply that times 15 billion years and multiply that times 365 days and times 0.0001, you know, you get to the heat, it comes out to 6 days and nights.
Yeah.
So from the perspective of the Creator, when he said he created all this in 6 days, he was speaking from his own perspective. That was totally 100% accurate. So what happened to me is for about a week I went to bed at night thinking, wow, this is all real.
Yeah.
That was something that shook me to the core because I realized now I was into something real. You know, how about you? I mean, that was shocking to me.
Well, you know, it was a funny thing. I didn't grow up religious, but I had gotten to the point where I knew that these guys in the Torah were honestly reporting something that they had seen, and it was impossible for them outside of prophecy or some being telling them that this thing was going to happen. I had read archaeologists who said that, you know, when Yahusha, who's fighting the battle, you know, right after Moshe has died and the earth stands still for 24 hours, that's a pretty big event, you know. So that could not go unnoticed. And amazingly, the Aztecs, I can't remember whether it was the Aztecs or the Incas, they recorded about the same time, if you lay the calendars down, that it
No, the Chinese did too.
Did they? Okay.
Chinese did too. They recorded it
so,
too.
So, I mean, those events, so you say, okay, these guys honestly reported, and they seem to have known ahead of time. So I was a big prophecy guy throughout my whole life. I knew the stuff in there was true. I didn't know how to relate to God because, growing up, I didn't like I grew up in the South, and then we moved to Australia when I was quite young. But we, religious people, Dad wasn't religious, and so he didn't, so I didn't go to church. So, but I knew there had to be something to it. So as I got to be an adult, I said, okay, we've got Christianity or we've got Judaism. And they don't believe in a Messiah, and I know the Messiah had to exist based on everything I've read. So I'm going to throw my camp in there and find somebody, the smartest Christian I know, to tell me how this works and what I'm supposed to do, because I just couldn't find it. I mean, that was what is so remarkable about our journey to find, into reading yada yada, an introduction to God and all. I mean, I couldn't find it myself. I wanted to. I had the desire to. And that's probably why Yahweh let me find it, because I wanted to enough. And the same, this is true of my wife, too. And she's the one that actually heard Yahweh on the radio and said, you got to read this stuff. And she downloaded or printed some, 50 pages of it. I don't know if she did it that day or the next day, but she said, read this. And I did.
She knew a winner when she saw it.
Oh, yeah. She's quite frankly, she's more open to listening to people that are really out there than I am. And she said, you got to listen to this, because this makes everything you believe is wrong. And I said, well, not everything, but you know what I mean. And I'm going,
yeah, sure.
Wow. And
you're missing the mark. That's all it's been me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had a huge library that I was trying to go through, trying to find the answers. And I knew Abraham. I couldn't understand why the Christian deal had to be different than Abraham's deal, because it seemed a lot simpler. The way the contract he got with Abraham seemed a whole lot better. Or certainly a whole lot simpler. So I just couldn't put all the pieces together. And I was trying. But when I started reading it, without being repetitious, all my little ducks, fell in a row. And I said, oh, wow. And I just kept reading, kept studying. And the thing I liked about Yada Yada, an introduction to God, and even a question in Paul that's just been a thrill for me, is that it's a translation from the oldest text, from the Dead Sea Scrolls. Even when you can't find it with the Masoretic, he tells you what he did and why he did it this way. I can research everything he said, and I, with the help of a handful of lexicons and dictionaries and so forth, I can dig down and find whether someone's telling me the truth or not. You know, it's footnoted.
It's not like it takes you. It doesn't even take you 30 seconds anymore.
No, I'm slow, but I can.
No, I'm saying if they're talking. If they're talking, a religious individual, a religious individual is going to get right into loving everybody. Yahweh's going to be omnipresent, and Yahweh did this for me and that for me. Well, they won't even say Yahweh; they don't use his name.
No.
And you'll see amen behind everything, and on and on. Mm-hmm. And this is why Yahweh. Yeah, I don't believe. There's any magic to this at all. The reason he tells us not to memorialize or constantly be bringing up, the names of pagan gods or goddesses, mm-hmm. is because he's guiding you and me away from religious speak.
Yeah.
So when somebody says, through their faith, they're saved by grace. Well, okay, faith, that's Fidus, that's the goddess of Rome, with all their powers and all that. And then you've got Grace, of course, with the Gratia, right? So, I said, it's not magic. He's telling us to walk away from religious people.
Yeah. But everything you find, everything he said is it just builds on itself. He repeats it over and over. It's very simple, although there are thousands of layers you can keep digging. You'll never get tired of going, seeing something more, but you won't find contradictions. Yahweh is very consistent throughout all this, and once you learn, once you get your perspective right, and once you learn enough, and you do all the checking that you need to do, and yada yada, it tells you how to do it. It's no magic to it. It's not like a secret code or secret society or some silly stuff. And you just dig it all out, and all of a sudden you say, wow, that's true. Now, I've always been a big prophecy guy, and some of the things that have happened, I like you with the time thing. I don't know, Roy from Australia is going to do a whole program, I think, next week or the following week, which would be fascinating.
Time light?
Yeah, sure. So he's
going
to do a whole show, I think, with Yada next week is what he said. So if it's not next week, it'll be the following week, but that's going to be fascinating. So I was kind of blown away with that. But let me tell you a couple of things, and you can come in on these. That there was about three other things that just blew me away here recently. Syria with the twisted steel. Description of Syria and its relationship to the end times with
Yisrael. Yeah, that's how he starts it off. Damascus, yeah, you're a twisted heap of ruins, and that's just what it's starting to look like.
I mean, it's so peculiar because you couldn't see it. It's not rubble. It's twisted heaps with the steel girders and all, and that's just amazing. The description is so accurate, and the time is so precise on what's happening. Then when they came up with the translation, which I'm working on right now just for my own pleasure, is the Chabuk with what he says about Paul. I about fell out of the chair.
Oh, yeah.
I just freaked me out. I said, wow.
Yeah, that is we show that most of the time we use that to show people that Paul was, you know, a liar. Look, it was 666 years, by the way, before he published his first letter.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
this is what we got. Yeah, it should be to people. This is what we've got Yahweh writing about this guy, that he says the name Sheol. He describes him as proud and puffed up, and how he uses circular reasoning and goes around promoting the idea of lack of circumcision and all this stuff, and everything that Paul did. And of course, you know, if you want to talk about, accurate prophecy, the way that Alexander the Great died. Wow. You know, internal rupturing and all this. You know, and of course they thought for years that he had died in a drunken stupor, but actually that's what, you know, typhoid fever will make it look like.
Wow.
And your internals begin to rupture and everything else. So, you know, that's that was an amazing prophecy. But go ahead. And by the way,
no, I
was going to
say, one of the third ones, this was one of the early ones that kind of blew me away. Because my trigger was the name and gosh, a whole host of them after that. But I, as a Christian, had already gone through studying where Daniel had said, okay, this is when the Messiah would enter the gates, and done the timelines. We'd done studies on the timelines of this calendar over another calendar, over the Persian calendar, over the Gregorian calendar, and so forth, and it all comes out to exactly the same time. Any way you cut it, there it is. That's when he shows up for Passover. So I knew that Yahweh always seems to tell you when everything's going to happen in time, and I couldn't understand why in the Christian world we kept repeating that thing out of Matthew or John or wherever it is, where it is no one knows the time when he'll return, when it seems odd that he would tell you so much and then leave off that. And then when in yada yada, when you get to the timeline, the prophecy timeline that leads up to 2033, that blew me away very early in my first year. I just went, wow. And
you know, that was something I always asked for, to have an understanding of when the return was. And I knew it would be a Yovel year. I knew it would be a Yovel year.
I knew it would be in the fall because we studied the seven Moed Mikris, but we were told, don't worry about it. We don't have to do that stuff. But we, you know.
Now, who were you with? What outfit?
No, I went to an independent church out in Los Angeles, but he was a PhD, and he was a Paulinist. I didn't understand what that meant probably the whole time I was there because I didn't care that much about Paul, but the guy was, obviously he was crooked and deceiving, but he was certainly a scholar in that sense. He knew a lot of stuff. I mean, I'm glad he died because I never would have what might still be stuck around listening to him. So
they know a lot of worthless
things. Cruel to say, but
No. He's dead. He's dead.
Yeah,
that's a good thing, you know.
Yeah, but I couldn't hurt any more folks. But so I knew a lot of things, but I couldn't put the picture together. But so that to me is when Yada talks about this, and I've seen. The original, or one of the original first edition copies of King James Bible, you know. So I know it doesn't have a James, you know. And I've seen, you can't hardly name a Bible that I haven't seen one of the first editions of, and things like that. So I knew the placeholders are there, you know, in the translations. So when he would say, this is so, I didn't have to look up and say, is he lying about this? Or how come nobody else knows about it? Yeah, everybody knows that. It's there. I mean, everybody that's looking for it is going to find it. So I knew a lot of that stuff was true. So then I tried to fill in all the other gaps, and that's when I came to figure out, wow, this is just unbelievable.
So, yeah, well, it's intentional.
Unbelievable. It just kind of freaked me out. So is James,
but you get a bunch of people who still want to argue with you and tell you, oh, no,
well,
you know,
William,
that was man that wrote that. How you doing, Kirk?
Hey,
how you doing, Larry? You know, I get that all the time where people are telling me, well, you know, William, how do you know that's right? You know, man wrote that. Yeah, and then you point these prophecies out and how they came to fruition, and they still want to try to, you know, argue.
Talked about was Sheol, and that that he will mislead, you know, people from all over the world, Gentiles from all over the planet. He even called himself the apostle to the Gentiles. You know, and he describes exactly what he does right down to the T and how he misleads. He calls Paul the plague of death, right? And, and you know, how many billions of Christians have there been that have walked the planet? Several billions.
And about two and a half of them now.
Yeah, I mean, several billion Christians have walked the planet. And they were misled from the foundations of Paul's concept, where he leached off the Moed Mikra of Pesach, or Passover, where he took the strokes due to the family. And, of course, that's for the family he took the strokes, not for anybody who believes in me. You know, they misquote Yohanan, because Yohanan doesn't say anybody who believes. It goes on further in that writing to say, but you can't say you believe in me and not do what I do. Which would walk without religion through the Moed Mikra. I mean, how do you say you follow a guy and you take an opposite path?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, you can't.
There's a lot of times you could. I mean, there's many, many times in what they call the New Testament where Paul's caught lying, or, you know, Luke, you know, is caught lying. Whoever wrote for him, I want to say it was Luke. But, like, if you read in Acts 9, you know, he says that, and the men journeying with him stood speechless, hearing indeed the word, but seeing no one. But then you go to Acts 22:9, it says, and those who were with me indeed saw the light and were afraid, but they did not hear his voice speaking to me. So did they hear and not see, or did they see and not hear? Which one is it?
I don't listen much to Luke, because we're not even supposed to look at hearsay, and everything he had to do, say, or do was hearsay evidence. There were, you know, he didn't witness anything. He was just Paul's historian, so all he knew was what Paul told him.
But it shows his fault, because Paul couldn't get his story right. So, I mean, other than that, it doesn't have much value. But, you can even turn that one on it. It's like, this guy can't get his act together, and he's dictating it, you know. So what's the problem there? I never heard a translation. I didn't read Paul much. I mean, even though I went to a Pauline church, I mean, admittedly a Pauline church, just the preacher was just Pauline through the core. And I never really just sat down and read Paul. I would read Matthew and Revelations and Genesis and the Psalms and the prophets and so forth. That was about what I like to study. So, but when I started reading Question Paul, this, I never knew that he said, he's a pervert. Now, let's see, a guy says, I'm a pervert, I'm crazy, I'm possessed by a demon. I mean, at what point do you say, well, in that case, you go your way and I'll go mine? I mean,
right.
How do you hide that from the...
Yeah, in Philemon 1:19, he says, I think I'm pronouncing that right. He says, I, Paul, write this with my own hand. I will repay it, and I won't mention that you owe me your very soul. I mean, how do you...
Beg your pardon?
Yeah. Philemon 1:19, read that. Oh. That's what he said.
That's pretty bad news. I mean, you know, when he said he wished everybody under the Torah would be castrated, and Yahweh says it's his Torah instructions that save you. Nothing else. No other path. This is what he said. You know, and then he wishes everybody under the Torah to be castrated. And he called the Torah pornography. Porn. That's the word he used.
So William, what was your hot button? What grabbed you to send you on this journey?
Well, I mean, I always thought like there was something wrong with religion, especially Christianity. And then just I've always wondered, like, wow, all these different religions, how can they all be right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's impossible. So, but I think it was one time I was on a train in New York City, and I seen this young man. He was actually younger than me at the time, and he was reading, you know, it said the Book of Yahweh. That's what it said.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, hey, you know, and at the time I was studying, you know, what's called the Bible pretty hard. And and so, you know, the young man, you know, I said, what is that? He goes, oh, this is the Book of Yahweh. And I go, oh, okay. And then he goes, it's what you would call Bible. And I'm like, well, who's Yahweh? You know, and he's like, well, that's God's name, you know. And oh, no, he goes, well, what's God's name? And I said, God. And he goes, no, he has a name. It's not God. And so once he kind of challenged me, I was like, wow, you know. Let me, and he was the son of a pastor who was, you know, his dad was a pastor of a Pentecostal church, and he was kicked out of that church because
mm-hmm.
He started questioning. And so I remember the young man, his name was Ray. And so I just went ahead and started to see if what he was saying was true. And so, and then that was pretty much it. And that was probably about, I'd say about maybe 18 years now.
Wow.
And so, yeah. And so, you know, I was up and down and just going back and forth. But when I, you know, pretty much, I started visiting this other website, and it was kind of a messianic, type thing, and a blend of Judaism and Christianity, if you will. And I was like, mm-hmm. you know, checking that out, and the guy seemed pretty sincere, but then, you know, I noticed some things were wrong there. And so you know, I just remember getting really frustrated and even you know, crying about it. You know, I was like,
mm-hmm.
I just want to know your truth. I just want to know your truth. And I cried out to him, and I was like, I want to know, you know, I want to know your real name. And so I went to sleep, and I had a pretty vivid dream. And in the dream, I said Yahweh. I said that name. And so I went ahead and got up, and, you know, the next day, whatever, and started doing some research. And I had to dig pretty deep, but I came across the Bless Yahweh website.
Really?
And you know, and that was it. I also had seen one young man who was explaining why he felt Yahweh was the proper pronunciation, and he kind of mentioned, like, you know, look at, he was watching the Israeli news, and he noticed that Netanyahu, you know, his name was Netanyahu. Mm-hmm. So then he, you know, he said he felt like the name was Yahweh. That was the proper pronunciation. But, you know, when I seen the Bless Yahweh website, that was it for me. You know, it was self-explanatory. It was talking to me. It was just like, I just loved everything about it. It was user-friendly, seeing the no donation mark. You know, mm-hmm. I was like, no donation? Whoa, this is like...
We don't take money here.
We don't take money. I don't want your money, you know.
Yeah, you gotta,
I'm like...
You have to have
I
a
was like, wow.
I had a woman offer to give me donations because I was sharing notes with her. She goes, I said, you realize we don't take money. Oh, I will. Believe me, I'm going to send you some money. I said, oh, believe me, you're not either.
You know? Save your family.
I wouldn't even tell you where to send it. You know, this isn't the thing here. You know, this is,
right.
Yahweh says
right.
It's free. You know, there is something I want to bring up because of what you said, you know. This is the proper pronunciation. I was on a friend of mine's site who's Jewish. Hers is not, you know, any kind of page sharing Yahweh's words. It's more of a pro-Israel, you know, political page, really. And I showed them that the best thing to do would be what, you know, the king did way back when he just decided to brush off the Torah, you know, and, mm-hmm. and get rid of all the religious buildings and religious paraphernalia, and then Yahweh blessed, you know, Israel again. And this guy chimes in and he goes, oh, how good of you to know how to pronounce his name when none of us can even do it. Now, they can say Shalom. They can say Torah. They can say Mount Moriah, you know, but they cannot say Yahweh.
Well,
well, one other thing, it was never Yahweh that said, if you mispronounce my name, I will kill you. It was the rabbis. That was their mm-hmm. trick. I mean, yeah. I'm Larry, but if I'm in Italy, they say Larry. I mean, so what? I know who they're talking to. And Yahweh does too. It's the spurning of his name that he hated, and supposedly so you don't mispronounce the name, the sacred name. He doesn't look at it like that. He never says that. Never once says it. Only the clerics said that.
He doesn't care if you have an accent. He can't help your accent, but.
That's exactly
but
right.
But I know how to spell it right.
Exactly.
But, you know, that was kind of a kick for me when I kept looking on, trying to figure out, okay, I want to study this better. I want to translate these things. And, okay, I've got to learn the alphabet. So I'm looking at the alphabet, but I've also got these charts that are saying, you know, this is this era alphabet and this era alphabet. And then all of a sudden you get back to the ancient, the oldest one, pre-Babylonian alphabet. And it's a magnificently beautiful alphabet. I mean, it's every word is charming. I mean, it's graphic. So it appeals to me as an artist. It appeals to me as a simpleton. I can read
You're
it.
You're talking about the pictorial.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's that's the oldest alphabet in the world. And then you all of a sudden you read where Yosha's saying, don't change the smallest letter, don't change the stroke. And I'm saying, well, my gosh, you can't get any further removed from that by... They got this block language that looks awful. It doesn't say anything. Three or four of the letters look almost exactly the same within a fraction of a millimeter trying to draw them. And they don't speak to anybody. And then you have a point system so you can mispronounce it. Well, so I said, okay, I only have a little bit of time left in my life. Let's figure out what I can learn. And so I decided I'd make a issue out of it and learn the ancient stuff as much as I could there. And I found out Yosha's already mad at him because he's talking to him because they've already changed it, you know, in real time. They're not using that even in the Dead Sea Scrolls. They're using kind of the Babylonian. So I went back to the oldest ones, and it was extraordinarily satisfying to me to find out how much each one of those words mean, or those letters mean, in addition to when you put them together and the words mean everything. So to me, it's been tremendous fun. I mean, I can't do all this. I haven't learned modern Hebrew, so I couldn't, you know, argue with things, but I would argue at the point with somebody who's rabbinical. I'd say, you're not even using the same language, man. Don't tell me how you pronounce something. I mean, if you're going to point everything to your convenience, that's not what God said. That's not what Yahweh said. That's not what he wrote. So listen, it's not even worth the argument.
Yeah, and I want to make something clear as well. Like even you know when I learned very quickly not to be emotional anymore. Like so, I you know when I heard the name and I had that dream, I was like, you know, I want to make sure because I didn't want to get duped again, right? Yeah, I didn't want to get duped. So I was like, you know, I came across Yada's writings and I was like, ITG. Because I reached out to you know Richard and he went ahead and he said, look, buddy, you know there's forums and there's this and that and there's a bunch of amazing people that know way more than I do that could probably help. And then he helped me to make contact with JB and one thing led to another and then I started to read the Intro to God and I was like, this guy's out of his mind. I was like, look what he's saying about Paul. I was like, no way. You know, and I said, but I'm going to treat this like a movie, you know, a movie. I'm not going to listen to what everybody says about it. Let me go ahead and hear this out, you know, or see it, you know, see it. And when I seen that Yada was literally trying to leave no stone unturned, and providing all of these resources and things, and then continuously requesting that we go ahead and confirm for ourselves. And then when I started to try to refute that information and seeing that he was right over and over again, I was like, man, let me listen to this guy, right? So I went ahead and started listening to SM, and then one day I called in. That's how I met Larry and Yada, and best thing I ever did.
Yeah. Well, I can, you know, see that easily, because I did pretty much the same thing. My wife asked me, and says, you know, we've been on this road with some pretty, with a heavy-duty scholar preacher that we really trusted and thought he knew everything, because he spoke Hebrew and he spoke Greek and da-da-da, or at least he could read it and write it. And his PhD from Stanford, this is not a dummy, you know. And I said, she said, are you sure? And we were both pretty sure, but then I decided, okay, I better do my due diligence and really look up a lot of these words. And every time I went to it, dadgum, the older the manuscript you go to, the more accurate it becomes. And mm-hmm. everything else, you can find the years almost, or the decades or the centuries when they just flat changed it. I mean, I don't even look at the King James there. Even when I go to some of the ancient translations, they'll give you the ancient translations, and then they'll tell you what the King James translation was. I don't even look at them anymore. I just go right to the ancient ones and see if that's accurate, and it seems to be true all the way through. I mean, these guys worked hard to change this. They hate you.
Mm-hmm.
They want you to die, or they don't. Yeah. Or they don't believe anything they're saying, and it's just a money making opportunity.
Well, when you remove his name right from his word 7,000 times, I mean that's clearly you know, clearly telling us that's evidence in itself, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, just the 7,000 times is straight up his name removed. But, you know, when you start thinking about other names, like Eliyah becomes Elijah, or, you know, Zachariah becomes Zechariah, and Mount Moriah was really Mount Moriah. You know, and the Maaseiah became what? HaMashiach, or Messiah. And HaMashiach is, you know, with a definite article of the, is never written once. I told a woman that, and she goes, oh, no definite article. Ha, ha, ha. I said, you know, love of the name is part of being family. He says so. You know, for those of us who are foreign-born, it says straight up, love of the name. So what he's saying, that's a common thread with all of us. You know, because he's seen the future, so he's looking in the past back, telling us this common love we all had. And I love seeing Maaseiah. If I see somebody write that, I know right away I'm dealing with somebody that knows what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. If they say HaMashiach, I know I'm dealing with somebody who's still looking.
Yeah.
If I see Yahweh, I know. And if I see Yahusha, I know, combination of Yahweh and Yasha, being Yasha meaning salvation, and actually a lot more than salvation, but we'll just stick with that. But Yesha is from Yasha, and so when I see somebody and they're calling Yasha Yahu, or the person known as Isaiah today, if they're calling him Yesha Yahu, I know that these people are using a corrupt form of Hebrew and probably a little lost. You know, when I see the Yah, I know I'm dealing with family. I know I'm dealing with covenant member. Don't you see it that way? I mean,
absolutely. Oh, yeah, you can right away. Now, sometimes they just don't know yet. I mean, that doesn't mean they don't have an open mind. They just haven't been, they haven't learned yet.
Oh, yeah, I'm not condemning. But, I'm saying they're still
No, but I mean, you know where they are. You immediately know where they are in their study, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we're all looking. I don't mean to make it sound like that. Yeah, but the love of the name is part of it. So I see that as an attachment. I take that seriously. He says that seriously.
Yeah.
So when I see somebody writing, say they're going to share some information out of Yahweh's words, and they start calling them scripture and Father says. It's, you know, especially if you see the Lord, you might as well just fold up and go home because you know you're dealing with somebody who does not know Yahweh. And if he doesn't know him, what's he doing writing about him?
Right, yeah. That's like somebody I'm going back and forth with, which I'm hearkening to the advice of Larry and JB and Yada and a lot of people in the family and just staying away from it at this point because the guy has like 2 degrees and I guess because I'm just a blue collar guy, he refuses to listen and I'm like, dude, you know, he's saying Lord and saying Jesus and talking about how he changed Christmas and what it represents and he does 3 gifts with his kids and he's, I'm like, I'm getting away from this already, you know, and I'm like, okay, and, you know, oh, no, that's not what it means to me, but he knows it's pagan, though. That's the thing. He knows
it's
pagan.
So these are the things Yahweh called an absolute abomination. An abomination. A disgusting religious way. That's what he called. Disgusting. And he says, well, I'm going to go do this disgusting thing, and by doing this thing that is disgusting to the Creator, somehow I'm going to endear myself and my children to him. Wow. Brilliant. Brilliant idea.
Yeah. Now, when you were a Christian and you read something to the fact that the narrowest way, and only few find it, and wide is the way, and millions find it, I'm paraphrasing, you must have known as a Christian there's billions of them, if not hundreds of millions of them.
Oh, yeah.
How do you deal with that?
I did what every other Christian does.
Yeah, just ignored it?
I didn't question it. I didn't question it. I just said, no.
Well, I just figured only out of Christianity, all of it can't be right, so it has to be a very small number.
Well, they oppose each other. A Baptist will tell the Methodist he's going to hell.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Right. And that was one of the questions this guy threw at me. He's like, oh, you know, well, you know, it's our observing this and that, and so how do you, you know, he goes, well, what do you feel about Christianity? And, you know, well, do you think they're Torah observing? I'm like, no.
How could
they not? You know, I said, I haven't met one that is yet. And
if he was, he wasn't going to be a Christian for long.
Right. And that's what I explained to him. And I said, look, you know, Christians, depending on what sect they run with, that's what they follow. You know, they pretty much, you know, go wherever the wind pushes them, right? Yeah. Wherever the wind blows, that's where they go. So I'm like, you know, whatever feels good, that's what they go.
Thought with the narrow is the path and few will find that way. I used to sit there and go, well, I'm not one of them finding the waves. I set my own mind. I'm here and I'm listening to this, but I'm not really connecting with anything that's making me any different than anyone else in here. And we can't all be on the right road because, you know, very few people are going to find it. It's not rooms full of people meeting every Sunday all over the planet are finding it. I mean, he said that. And then, of course, you know, we understand now that he was saying, not only do you walk the path of the Moed Mikra, but you do it without religion. You know, I mean, it's not just walking the path. You can't drag religion in there with you.
No.
You know, because he looks at that like we view the bubonic plague. I mean, that's already been tried. And religion has led to where the world is today, which is a really just a horrible place to live. I don't know about you guys, but I'm finding so much of my time is eaten up in making money that there just isn't much life left at the end of it. I mean, you know, I hate to say that, but it's true.
Yeah. Are you running a business?
Yeah. I own a business and run a business, and it's, you know, you just, boy, some days you feel like it doesn't even pay to get started. You know, I mean, really. It's awful. And today, I mean, I'm dealing in high-dollar ticket items that we're shipping all over the country, and you've got thieves you got to worry about. You got a merchant banking system that does not protect you. I mean, there's just so many things that go into this that it makes for a rough time. And nobody wants to keep their word, not the buyer, not the seller. You know, everybody's, not everybody, but the majority you know, they're skating away in any which way they can.
Wow.
And that's the world we live in. That's the slavery of Babylon.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we live in a preoccupational state. I mean, everything else is more important in this world than Yah. And
Yah.
It's sad. Yeah. Yeah. It's really sad.
Oh, know? There are people that don't even want to hear the words. You know, I mean, my own wife, I'll be taking the time to get on the phone to tell somebody, share some words, share yada yada, share ITG, share this show, whatever we're sharing. You know, the more you hear, the better off you're going to be. And you know, my wife will be going, oh, you're preaching to somebody. Preaching to somebody. You know, if you don't get that I don't preach, you know, if you don't get it, you're just not going to get it. You know, and you know, Yalda, she's a sweetheart of a person and all that, but she can't get it. She can't get it. She doesn't get it.
Wow.
And you know, if people want to drag religion into the family, it ain't going to happen. So that narrow path, we're not only looking at the path and walking in the door, but we're doing it free of religion. I mean, put yourself in the Creator's position. If I built a home and I wanted to know the people inside that home, and they wanted to know me, supposedly, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, do this, this, and this, and I'm going to come in and do this, this, and this. We're going to get to know each other. And then you did the opposite.
Right.
Well, you have every right to say you can't stay here. Yeah. That's not fair.
And by the way, while I'm saying it, if I built this big complex where many families lived, and I said, boy, I'd sure like to get to know you. What religion would that be?
Yeah. Well, it's the unreligion, right? The non-religion.
Right. Yeah, I heard Morgan Freeman say in a movie one time, I had to laugh because, well, you know, I talked to God, and he told me he was an atheist. I thought that's closer to the truth than anything you'll get out of the religious. You know,
right.
You know, I mean, you know, atheists, they have their own religion, too, which is a religion of irrationality where worms become people given a billion years or something. I mean, of course, it's all nonsense. You know, the first plant life didn't even appear until 3 billion years ago. And everything they say is based on and given billions and billions and billions and billions of years. And, of course, we know now that DNA is an actual double helix language. And, you know, I've never known of a language to accidentally fall out of the sky. You know, given 100 billion years, it wouldn't matter. A language has to be written.
For atheism to be true, our species would have to be older than this planet. We'd actually have to be older than the planet Earth. So,
we'd also have
evolution gets thrown out the window.
Yeah, well, I mean, you'd also all science would stand on its head because. And by the way, speaking of science, you know, the second line in Bereshit, Yahweh talks about the Big Bang. The Big Bang. You know, I mean, come on, they didn't even know about this theory until, 60 years ago. I mean, you know, and it's not a theory. It's just all that is gamma, real, real intense gamma rays that have been left behind, and there's a real screeching sound. That's the whole Big Bang. And that Yahweh used the term. So, you know, talk about prophecy, there you go. You know, there's another good one. You know,
yeah,
of course, that was in the past, but nobody knew it when he wrote it 3,500 years ago. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I was thinking about Kirk's question. As far as like you know, there was multiple things that did it for me. I actually got kicked out of this church I was attending, a non-denominational church, and they were like, "Yeah, I have over 60 years experience in here," and I was like, "Well, why do you guys teach us that the Torah is no more?" You know, when Yahusha, you know, at the time I was saying Jesus, and he said, you know, he came to fulfill it. I was like, why do you teach that it's done away with? And he said, not one jot or tittle. Nothing's changing about it. You know, he said, you know, I realized that heaven and earth was still here. It still existed. So and they couldn't answer that. And there was one guy who was honest about it. He said, I don't know the answer to those questions. And he was like the minister or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, why did Abraham, Abraham was Torah observant, because they tried to tell me that, oh, the Torah was implemented Moses brought the Torah. And I'm mm-hmm. like, no, I said, it existed.
Yahweh said that Abraham heard his Torah. And that goes to show you that Torah doesn't mean a group of laws. It's not law.
Right.
It's listening to his instructions. Noah had to listen to his Torah instructions in order to build that, ark.
Mm-hmm. Ark. Let me ask you something. When the apostles or the disciples or followers, the learners, when after Yahusha fulfilled this so-called thing, that he fulfilled everything, how come they kept, why were they continually Torah observant? Why did they go to the temple?
Correct. That was awesome.
Why were they meeting on the Moed Mikra,
on the shop,
like Shabuah?
Shabbat, like us.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
So what happened there? I mean, why did they still teach the same? Why did they still teach circumcision?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, we know why. Yeah.
That's the path, man. If you're arguing it as a Christian, and someone says that to William, I mean, the rebuttal, it would seem to me, is to ask the question, what you're really telling me is you don't follow any of those people, and you don't follow Yahusha, and you don't follow any of the people he chose to carry on. So who are we following? And then it comes right back to Paul, and now you got them cornered.
Well, that's the one too, right there. When I tell him in Yao Kanan, right? What did Yahusha say? You know, he said, "You see me, you see the Father, right? You want to have eternal life, you have to come through Him, right?
Yeah.
Well, why? Because He was the Torah in the flesh. You want to have eternal life, you go through Him. Well, what was He? What did He represent?
He's the Torah. He's the Word.
He was the Torah.
He's the living word. He's Hadabar, the word come to life.
Right.
That's what he says.
Right.
He said that living Torah flows from his mouth. That was one of the prophecies about him. He carefully observes the Shabbat. So if I'm following him and looking at what he did and saying, mm-hmm. okay, I'm now going to imitate what he did, then I would have to seriously observe the Shabbat like we're doing tonight.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and he was able to basically counter everything that Hasatan threw at him. Why? Because he knew the Torah. He was the mm-hmm. Torah. But we can do the same. If we study the Torah, we can do the same. You know, and it's like, and that's the only way I'll tell you the truth, and I said this the other day on FB. You know, the moment that I am not in the Torah, I make bad decisions, really bad decisions. I'm a different person,
mm-hmm.
and it's just because, you know, then I'll realize, man, are you reading? Are you, you know, and I think it's just who I am. I mean, I've always been more bad than good my whole life, you know, and so.
Finally an honest man. Finally an honest man.
Who's
not? I mean,
we're nothing. I don't know why y'all would like us sometimes, but he certainly I'm so glad he does.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what Dode came to understand when we were reading the 119th, you know, and it was never anything that Dode did. And, you know, we think of all these great things. I've said this before, that Dode did, you know, like standing in front of an army by himself, basically, you know,
mm-hmm.
because everybody else was shaking in fear. And you think, yeah, that's the kind of guy I'd like to be. Then you come to find out Dode said those weren't the things that even counted. It was my understanding of the Torah.
Yeah,
yeah, I got to know Yahweh. You know, that's what counted. You know, all this other stuff's just a byproduct of that.
I get it, Fred, I don't rely on me.
You know,
Fred wrote William Bad. Fred, you need to ask my mother about that. She'll set you free there, buddy.
Yeah, I don't know anybody that's good.
Let me ask a couple of questions just for a reaction in regards to, there's a lot of audience out there and they encounter a lot of the same things, but I was curious. I wrote down a few things that struck me on the same conversation we started out with, how did you feel when you know, most of us, because all three of us came out of a Christian frame, so we all believed it was a heaven or hell situation. What was your reaction? What did you feel when you figured out that, when you found out that the soul had three destinations?
Oh yeah, that was like, that blew me away, because I always felt there was something wrong with that, right? Like, I mean, what about all these people?
Love me or I'll burn you now.
Yeah.
There's got to be something wrong here.
Like, oh man, yeah. I was like, this doesn't sound right.
Oh, I was happy to hear it. You want to know? I was overwhelmed. I was overwhelmed.
Oh, really?
This all fits with the non-religious theme that he's talking about.
I'm talking about eternal hellfire and torment. That just never sat well with me. I'm like, this doesn't seem right. What is this? Like, what kind of
That's what it is.
But I actually brought that up to somebody who one of these messianic guys, and the same guy, and I wrote into him. I'm like, don't you think that that's evil? You know, and he said, no, that's judgment. That's judgment.
And his judgment stinks. My answer to that, I can tell you, it's just like my answer to Yahweh wanting to be called, you know, dealt with as an individual, and called on a name-to-name basis. It was good.
Now that blew me away. It made sense to me, though. And if you recall, Larry, when I first called into the show, you know, one of the things, it was about Yom Kippurim, and my wife and I were getting ready to fast and basically have our kids fast, and she and I didn't feel good about it, but especially her, right? Her maternal instincts kicked in, and she just didn't feel good about it.
Uh-huh.
And she was right. She was right.
Yeah.
And so I was listening to the show, right, hearing Larry and Yada speaking, and I was like, wow, you know, and I was like, I got to call these guys, you know, and it resonated with me, and all I could think about was, this really makes sense. This is what a loving father does, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't, you know, what can we do? We cannot earn salvation. It's impossible. You know, so.
Yeah, so you didn't go out and flog yourself?
No. we looked at each other. We were happy, my wife and I. We were very emotional about it. You know, and then I just kept studying, and I think what I love about...
Well, you know, we all know, and I just want to throw something in here, that during the return, you know, it's Yahweh fulfilling another of the Moed Mikra. He marks them out, he has a foreshadowing, and then he actually does them.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that the return, right there at the end of the Battle of Armageddon, we know that that's the fulfillment of because that's when he reconciles with the family.
Mm-hmm.
You see it right there,
right
there and then. That exact moment you see when the covenant is reconciled. And he points out in that diatribe, on that particular day, and they will eat food in Jerusalem that day. Now, there's no reason to point that out.
No fasting there.
Yeah, unless it's to say, look at this. It is not a fast. It's a feast.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't hardly have a Chag celebration without food and drink. I mean, we all know that. But somehow, in some religious sense, because the rabbis said so, we're supposed to punish ourselves on this day.
Right,
you know, what sacrifice can I offer that Yahweh didn't already offer? And the answer to that is, I can't. So why try?
Hmm.
And he points out there, do not try to do the work of the messenger. That would be a sacrifice, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So why are you why would you fast? Why would you show him you're sacrificing something for? You know, he wants to enrich the people that decide to take him up on it, not punish him or make him afflict themselves, you know. But that's my two cents. I just wanted to throw that in because he absolutely points that out on that day.
Yeah,
we've got a couple other people calling in. Do you guys want to take these calls too?
Yeah, let them in.
Let's try this. Who is in the 276 area code?
That's Tommy.
Okay, Tommy, step up to the plate, my man.
I wasn't calling in. I was just listening in, and you just caught me off guard. I just parked for the night.
What's up, Tommy? How you doing?
Pretty good, William. Good to hear from you.
You too.
What part of the world are you in there, Tommy?
I'm in Louisiana right now, just outside of New Orleans.
Bengal Tigers.
I'm not a sports fan. I wouldn't know. But, yeah, it kind of caught me off guard. But earlier when I was listening, I heard you guys all talking about what tripped your trigger and led you on this journey. And I think all of us had similar beginnings. We wanted to know God's name, and we wanted to know his truth. And I knew something in that book they called the Bible was true. And I was determined to get to know the God that I thought inspired some of those writings. And come to find out, the only conflict I had was with the adversary. Mm-hmm. Everything that I didn't like about the God in Christianity, it was all the adversary. And everything I come to know about God's word, it just made sense. All the questions, like I was mad at God, you know, saying, "Love me or burn in hell." And I wanted another option. And kind of like William did, I just kind of cried out. I said, "That's not fair. If I don't like you, I should be able to opt out." And just when I'm dead, I'm dead. And when I learned that there was another option, I didn't want to opt out anymore. I was like, well, I kind of like having an option, so why not proceed and go further and dig a little bit more, see what else is lurking in this religion.
Stuff. And it all made sense because you cannot, without the benefit of the Torah and understanding the walk of the Moed Mikra, without understanding those things where Pesach gives us eternity, Matzah perfects us, Bikurim adopts us into the family, Shavua enriches and empowers us, you know, without knowing these things, you don't even understand the path, and that's the path that Yahusha was walking. So without the Torah, you have no understanding of what Yahusha was even doing. He can't be understood apart from the Torah. No way.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah. What did you find the best in the reading? Did you like the yada yada, or did you like the intro to God, Tommy? Or what was it that that you spent most of your time reading when you first started?
When I first started, I was studying on my own. I'd already learned about the Paleo language, and I had just a few, like the word Kara. When I looked like. Earlier when Larry said Deuteronomy, what's that mean? I looked up Leviticus, trying to figure out what it means,
mm-hmm.
and that word Kara stood out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just started dissecting just a little bit at a time. I mean, it was about like sending a preschool student to an Ivy League college. I felt so overwhelmed, and then I stumbled up. My wife introduced me to The Unpopular Truth, and I started reading Larry's notes.
Hmm.
And I got about halfway through the ITG, and Larry encouraged me just to jump into the meat of yada yada.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I got into that, we were in the sixth day. I was hooked, kind of like Larry did with the creation timeline. Once I realized I was in the sixth day, this was real.
Yeah,
this was very real, and it was. I mean, I had to get up and go take a walk. I was kind of freaking out.
Well,
I like the yada yada.
Yeah,
you know, Monty and Tommy, she just messaged me is over there in Louisiana, Tommy. You know,
excuse me.
You're right there next to where Honey and her husband and Thomas are.
Oh, Thomas Hole, yeah. He's a truck driver too.
Oh, is he? I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, well, I think he's a local
right
driver.
Next door to him. But
Tommy lived out east. It's the same Tommy, right? Tommy Driggers?
That's right.
Yeah, but he's a truck driver. That's why he's down near New Orleans right now.
All right. Cool, man.
Sandy lives down there, too. So, you know, we've got a few people over there in Louisiana. You know, the thing that holds us together isn't money. It isn't a building. It isn't capital being sent somewhere. Because obviously we do all this ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I see the Bass family are constantly creating worksheets, and Amy is, you know, and putting them out, and people are sharing Yahweh's words.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're great. I mean, she's really done a lot of work, you know, and you got the Bless Yahweh side with Richard and all that. And everybody does this free, and everybody does it just to learn more. And we glean off each other all the time. There is no money involved in the relationship.
No.
None.
Didn't Yahusha say don't take a begging bag like the priest?
Yahweh said, hey, turn your ear towards me. I want you to be in the eternal covenant, and there's no cost to you. I mean, how clear does it have to get? You know, is there no cost or money to you involved? You know, and that's right. You know, and as soon as somebody starts bringing money into the picture, you know, we're dealing with a bad guy, you know, somebody that's really not, doesn't understand the covenant and how it works, or somebody setting himself up as a leader. We've got somebody from 812. I'm going to put them on as well.
Okay.
Who's on 812 area code here?
Well, I'm on 812, but I was just listening to the program.
Okay, well, but at the same time, you can pipe on. You know what got you into looking at the truth, or
the church I was in broke up back in 1995, and as far as I was concerned, what was the the church went to Paul of Tarsus totally. Before that, they tried to, it was a Sabbatarian group that tried to balance Paul of Tarsus with the Torah. So I heard Paul of Tarsus explain why, how it does fit with, he fits with the Torah. And I really didn't question at the time, but when they came out and went totally with Paul, that was the end of me in the church. So I spent 6 years trying to make sense out of religion between 1995 and about the time the 9/11, when the buildings got the planes crashed into them, and I had pretty well exhausted myself. I still hadn't figured out just what the crucifixion was all about. Anyway, I put it off for quite a few years, and about 3 or 4 years ago, I started back trying to. I went to the Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, started on Hebrews and Corinthians, trying to see what the witness writings had to say about the crucifixion as the reason for it. Now, most people, this is not a question to them, but to me it is. And I decided that I finally had gotten to where I just said this does not really explain things to me. So I just happened to be called in the sub about probably 12 hours later at the school, and subbing in the school system here, you mainly pass out your handouts, and then you're just there to make sure that the kids behave, which they do. And I got on the internet and started perusing the internet, and I ran into Mr. Wynn's material, and I have proceeded from there. That's how I got into it. I've basically been a Torah-oriented person since I was 19 years old back in 1965. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I've been around for a long time, but I could see there were problems, and my 6 years of night and day study almost, all I got to where I could do was tear everybody's religion down, including my own. So I was to some extent, on the same page as what Mr. Wynn was on, or at least I feel like it, so it wasn't too earth-shattering, and I read Yada Yah and Introduction to God, and started to get familiar with the Hebrew terminology like Shamar and Shema and Hamar, all the Hebrew words. And just here in the last month or so, I've finally gotten some bunch of lexicons and concordances, a couple interlinears, and a book on tells you how to read the Hebrew script, not understand it, but just the phonetics of it. Mm-hmm. I'm just picking away at things slow, just picking away at things in a slow fashion, and I probably shouldn't have engaged Mr. Wynn. I found my I can't send text messages, not text messages, emails anymore. Apparently, I'm blocked, so whatever I said wasn't.
What are you talking about? Well, you know, the way I look at it is that,
okay.
You know, we all got here the same way because we question religion, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one thing's for sure, religion's it's deadly. It's a killer. It's one of the reasons Yahweh doesn't want to be associated with religion. A religious speak, religious imagery, religious buildings. You know, I mean, he speaks of when he comes back, all of them just being torn down. You know, and trash, because that's how he looks at them, like they're just trash anyway. And so, you know, it's just, it was kind of Kirk's idea and JB's idea that we would go into what it was that tripped our trigger. And, you know, I think the one thing that we can all say is that, you know, we all decided religion was a lie.
Mm-hmm. It had to be, yeah.
And whether
it had to be the truth out there somewhere. That wasn't it.
Yeah, you know, it's like I said, if I made a building, or, you know, I made a, let's say I made an apartment complex full of people and I wanted to get to know the people that live there, what religion would you call that? You know, what religion was Adam and Chawa? You know, what religion was Noah? What religion was Abraham? Well, guess what, folks? They weren't of any religion. Neither was Dode. In fact, he was always fighting with the religious people, wasn't he? Because they didn't understand the Torah. They were trying to bring religion in, and Dode was like, really, you guys don't even know what you're talking about. You know, it's the Torah that's going to be this document that frees you from all the nonsense of this world. You know, and
it seems like the closer I get to God, Yahweh, the more I understand what he wants, the less I fit with the, well, I haven't fit with churches in a long time, but I even fit with them even less after listening to Mr. Wynn. He has a lot of
Well, it'd be pretty impossible at this point. You couldn't do it. How could you, with a straight face, walk into a church and sit down and participate in their nonsense? I couldn't do it. I look at it like a circus act. And a graveyard. It's kind of a combination between a graveyard and a circus act.
Yeah, it'd make me ill. I would throw up.
It's cartoonish.
I apologize. The gentleman from the 812 area code, what's your name, sir?
Rod,
okay.
Just so y'all know, we went off the air a few minutes ago. It's 6.
No, I know.
So,
yeah.
Oh, did you? Okay, I didn't know.
Yeah, but they can still hear us for now. But, yeah, it's just, you know, we all got there, you know, the same way, by questioning and by looking for the truth. And, you know, I've come to the point where I realize that Larry's got very little to do with his own salvation other than seriously considering Yahweh's words and observing them for what they really are. And just having, you know, just trust and rely on him, and that's the end of it. There isn't a lot more to it than that. There really isn't. And, you know, he doesn't talk about degrees of knowing. He really doesn't.
He didn't ask you to Shemar Torah and even be good at it.
No,
he just asked you to Shemar Torah.
Thankfully, that's right. You know, I'm thankful for that, by the way. You know,
yeah, me too.
I'm glad that there is not a lot expected of me, because the truth of the matter is I don't deliver much, you know. And
no, I just I'm constantly getting people from everywhere always telling me, complaining about Larry and this and that, and he's he uses foul language and this and that, and he's rough around the edges, and he, you know, he's offensive, and then I just get straight to it. I'm like, well, okay, well, what's more offensive, the fact that he's using these bad words, or the fact that you worship a pagan deity? Which one do you think God takes more offense to?
You can die from
and now William is a bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't think
so.
Yeah, I rubbed off on William. Yeah. No, you know, I'm kidding, obviously. You know, the problem the problem that they have is that they're all wrapped up in this notion that as long as you say it lovingly and kindly with a smile on your face, you can lie. And, you know, that's where the nonsense stops with me. I don't care if you smile. I don't care if you say you love me while you present a lie to me. A lie is a lie. And that's what they don't like.
I think they really get upset that they don't see you in a white robe and you know, with your hands in a holy position.
They never will. I don't know. You know, that's what I realize. And I know Yahusha stood up to him. I know Dode stood up to him. You know, I mean, they killed all the prophets, the religious people.
Dode cut off Goliath's head. Literally,
you know,
he cut his head off.
Yeah. You know, people don't
circumcise a jerk.
Yeah, and people don't, you know, the fact they come to you, I've had 1,000 of them say, you're not speaking in the right spirit. You know, because, you know, I'll ask them, who taught you to whore like that? You know, your Yahweh uses the term.
One,
you know,
one person wrote to me and said, what good deeds has Yada and Larry done and JB? What good
deeds?
What
well,
good,
I've
good
tell
deeds?
You.
And then, no, my response was this. Well, I don't know. If you'd like to know, you can ask them. But I know if I were doing good deeds, I wouldn't be announcing it publicly.
Exactly. Well, first of all, you know,
what's
when people talk about
anyway?
Their...
Right.
Well,
no,
there is no
relevance. Well, because when you're a Christian, you need to save the world.
The
you need to feed the hungry. You need to, you know, go help the elderly. And look, there's nothing wrong with that. But if I were doing that, I wouldn't tell people. Right?
Yeah,
so that's just all that question did was expose the hypocrisy of their pastors and so forth.
What I can tell you is this. There are families, and I'm not kidding you, that I've put up in hotels for a week at a time and fed them. Okay? When I do something like that, I don't do it to tell anybody.
Right.
In fact, this is the first time I'm probably saying it publicly, okay? You know, when I do something like that, you know, that's just a decision I made because I felt sorry for their kids and, you know, like to give them a break. Didn't change much, I can tell you that, but I did try to, I have tried to help a few people, you know. And I've always done it by reaching in my back pocket. You understand? I never asked anybody else for it. I never.
You mean,
you know,
when I need some help, you didn't pray for me there?
No. Yeah, whatever. You know, and so it's not the kind of thing you even say that you do. And where they're getting me, it isn't so much on the good deeds. And I find people that talk about good deeds don't really ever do anything. You know, they pray for you or some nonsense.
Yeah,
and by the way, Yahweh says their prayers are an abomination. So they're, you know, I don't know how many times. Well, how many times have you seen a candlelight vigil for somebody who went missing, a small child, a woman, or somebody lost? And they end up finding them dead, you know, right? Isn't that what happens?
Mm-hmm.
You know, over and over and over and over, thousands of times. Let's find what's her name, and let's have a candlelight vigil, and they all light and hold hands and pray and light their little candles, and she's dead. She's dead, and that's the end of it. And so, you know, I'm not sure what good a lot of prayer from a lot of people does. Probably
well, there's no instruction about praying because he doesn't really care he doesn't want you to pray and he knows your needs and so forth. But you know, if these people that tell you that you can always tell them, you know, if you were a Torah observant and knew, if you studied the Torah, you'd see that Yahweh has made provision for all of these situations. And if we were all like that, our society would cover all these needs.
Yeah.
He had plans for it, and he, you know, but we don't follow, we don't do what he says. Therefore, you know, so it's not about you doing a certain amount of good deeds or me doing a certain amount of good deeds or whatever. If we built our society based on the Torah's instructions, there would be no need.
That's correct.
Yeah, there'd be a good society. That's right.
Right.
There'd be freedom,
that's
too.
Right.
There would be
yeah.
freedom. You know, it's an astounding yeah. thing, too. You know, you bring this up. You know, I was thinking about it, actually, just earlier today. You know, our society is based on greed and lies and cheating, and all our political actors we call leaders. I mean, they're the last thing you'd expect to see in a leader, as far as I'm concerned. They lead from behind, you know, and these people, you know, you expect lies. You expect everything they say just to be nonsense, just to be nonsense. And yet people think there are political answers in this world.
Yeah.
If there was a political answer to what's going on in this world, it would have already been answered a long time ago.
You know, one of the questions that I hear you guys bring up once in a while is, do you feel there's more distractions today versus, let's say, back in the days? In other words, they'll get this question, what about the people that existed before all this modern technology? You know, did they get to know Yahweh? They didn't have the resources to do what you do today. And I kind of see it differently. I think that they actually had less corruption in the word, right, because not everybody was translating it like we have today. And they didn't have all these distractions. I mean, they actually had more time to focus on, you know, why are we here? Why do we exist? I think today it's worse. I think, you know, the internet is a good and bad thing depending on how you want to utilize it.
All of the people in Israel chose, or were carried off into bondage, or they chose to leave. You know, Yahweh never said for these folks to leave. So when they went off and went into Europe and they went into Asia and they went into Africa and so forth, it was never his intention that they run away. You know, he settled them there, and so if they had stayed near that center where Jerusalem is, then that's where knowledge flows, and they would have had access to it. I mean, they chose to go away, and that, of course, compounds, as he said in the first Tevet, it compounds from generation to generation to generation to generation. You condemn the whole multiple generations.
That's right. That's what Yahweh says in his 10th statement.
Yeah,
he tells us that.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know. Now, guys, I appreciate it. I've been grateful. Again, I'm going to have to bow out. I've got a couple of errands I need to run, if you don't mind. So, but
okay.
William, Larry.
Well, it's about time anyway.
Sure.
It's about time anyway.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, I had a rough week, but this is a nice way to finish it.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Hey, Tommy, it was good to hear from you, buddy. Take care, Rod.
Thanks, man. Good to hear from you always, man. Y'all have a good night.
Thank you all. Happy
all right, goodbye. Larry. Okay, bye. Bye-bye.
All right. See you, William. See you, Kirk.
Okay.
Stay safe out there, Tommy.
Good thing, Larry.